What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Evergreen. I just wanted to give you a heads up. I've got hats and books I'll be giving away on my Instagram for those of you that submit questions for me to answer on this podcast. All 2023, I'll be giving them away every few weeks. I'll be choosing some people to send this stuff off to thank you for submitting those questions. I really appreciate it. It keeps this podcast rolling and keeps me with content to talk about. So thank you all. Find me on Instagram at Jake Myers and submit a question, and I will try and send you a hat and a book that I've got for this podcast. Aside from that housekeeping stuff, I will be answering more of your questions on this podcast, so thank you for submitting. The first question I'll be answering is one about selling your property, how to maximize that sale when you do decide to sell one. I'll be helping you go through some eviction problems and questions when you've got a tenant who is not paying rent. And I will also help you build your portfolio more if you don't have the cash right now to keep buying. So keep listening and let's get into it. All right. Welcome back to another episode of Evergreen. Let's get right into it. Do you have any tips or tricks for selling a property? The market is really crazy right now, and I want to make sure I get as much as I possibly can for my property in this market. Now, those of you who have decided that now is the time to sell, don't be too bummed out. I know the market's down and quote unquote, you missed your opportunity, but there is still a ton of appreciation in the market and ton of equity out there. So, luckily I do have some tips and tricks as I am a real estate agent. So I've got some good ideas for you to kind of maximize that. And this is what I tell all of my clients when I'm selling a house. There's a balance between price and speed when selling a house, no matter what the market is. The market will dictate what your house is worth. Now, you can put whatever price you want up. Doesn't matter. If you bought your house for $200,000 a year ago, you can put it up for $1 million. That's fine. But the market will decide what that house will be worth. And that basically just means your house is only worth what someone is willing to pay for it, not a penny more. That's it. So what we can do to kind of maximize that number is one, be patient. This market is a little bit slower. It's not 50 offers in the first day and people are moving contingencies instantly and they don't even want to see the house. They don't care. They just want it. It's a little bit different. So like I said, that balance between speed and price, when you need to sell it fast, you've got to find the bottom. You need that bottom dollar. What is the lowest you're willing to take? What will you be okay with? Let's throw it up and let's, you know, get that thing sold. Otherwise, you really need to do a lot of competitive market analysis, which is basically just looking at comparative sales and seeing what has sold and what is pending to see where that house kind of lands. My first tip is get a real estate agent. Please do not be one of those for sale by owner people that are trying to do it themselves and don't know what they're doing and end up making mistakes. There's so much value in having a real estate agent. I'm not just saying that because I am one. When I first got my license and I did my first couple deals, they were pretty simple and kind of smooth. And I was like, man, real estate agents get paid way too much. This is like so easy. And then you start to get into bigger deals and it gets really complex and really bad in a hurry. So agents definitely have their value. And you need to get one when you're selling your house so that you can know these things and see them coming. So my first step is that competitive market analysis. Dive in and do not do what most people do. And they come to me and they say, well, this house is for sale up the street for $500. So mine should be $500 too. It's the same square footage. Just because it's for sale does not mean it's sold. Like I said, you can post whatever you want on your price. You can do whatever you want. You put $1 million, $500,000, $200,000, $50,000. It doesn't matter. Only look at houses that have sold recently. And what this market has done is it's pushed those comps way tighter. When the market was flat, appreciating 2-3% per year, you could go out 6-8 months and go, you know what? Let's really find like the neighbor's house. What did that thing sell for 6-8 months ago? You can go way out and get a ton of comps to look at your price. But right now, because of how fast the market's changing, when I'm looking at comps, I'm going like 30 days max. Like, I want to know what's selling right now. I don't want to look at what's sold in the last year, because you're going to get those comps from that 2.5-3% interest rate. And it's just not the same. It's a different market environment. So I don't want you to post your house for sale and just have it sit and just be bummed out all day that it's sitting and sitting and sitting and doing price drop, price drop, price drop. Now, with that balance between being patient and getting the most money you can out of your property, posting it initially at the right price is super important. If you do go pie in the sky and let the market decide what your house is worth, I've seen that the market loves to take advantage of people like that. I'll admit I've done it, where you see a house that comes up and you go, there's no shot they are getting that, right? Let's say they post it for six, they drop it to 550, they drop it to five, drop it to 450, drop it to four. And then you go, okay, obviously they're getting the heck beat out of them right now. And there's some opportunity at this point. They probably just want to lose this thing. Let's go in at 350, right? And then you buy it because the seller's just like, I don't know what's wrong with this house. This is the house of horror. I just need to get out of it. Oh my gosh, this is so bad. This is so bad. This is so bad. Buyers look at days on market, and they're really funny because, and I've had this with clients of mine, when you're buying a house, if a house has been on the market for 30, 45, 60 days, the buyers will almost be like, what's wrong with this house? It's been on the market for so long. I don't know. There must be something wrong with it. I don't want to look at it. No. It's like, if other people don't want it, they don't want it. If the days on market are small, that means the house is sold and you're never going to have the opportunity to buy it. So it's just funny. When I see days on market that are long, I just see opportunity, where other people see kind of a caution sign. And people want what other people want. They almost want to be in a bidding war and win, because it gives them that kind of fight of, everybody wanted this thing and I have it, and they can shrug their shoulders and feel good about themselves at the end of the day. There's a lot of that was happening in the last couple of years. So now that that's not really the case, it's good to avoid that big days on market. You want to post your house at a price that is competitive so that you do get that interest and get those buyers, maybe not bidding up, but at least walking through. When I'm putting an offer in on a house for a client and I say, hey, can I show your house at 11 this morning? And it's 10 o'clock and they go, yes, please, please show it, please show it, please show it. That tells me a lot. And if I say, can I show your house at 11 tomorrow? And they say, well, 11's booked, 12's booked. I've got one at 1, 2, and 3. Can you do 4:30? I go, okay, this is a different situation. And you have to act accordingly as a buyer. So it's good to have that kind of in your back pocket of creating some buzz, creating some interest when you list that house for sale. So if you are a real estate agent or you're a real estate professional and you can pull your own comps and look at those numbers to understand kind of what your house should be at, find what your bottom dollar is and do a good assessment. And this is, again, why I recommend a real estate agent. Do a good assessment of what your bottom dollar is going to be. Know what all the real estate agency fees are. Know what your closing costs are. Know what your tax is going to look like. This is so important to explain to sellers when they sell their house what their tax implications are. And if you don't know, please have them reach out to a CPA, because this can get people in a lot of trouble. I had a horror story from a deal I was doing. The sellers were waiting their 2 years to get rid of capital gains taxes. And escrow was not on board with the correct closing day. So they closed about 2 days early. Everything was done. Everything was all good. But they closed about 2 days early. And that ended up being the day of their 2 year capital gains tax remittance, where if you own a house, you have to live in it as your primary residence for 2 years. And if you do that, you get rid of all that capital gains tax, which can be 34-35%. So they wanted to get rid of that. This escrow company closed early because they weren't, no matter, and I emailed everybody multiple times confirming this date because I was so afraid of this happening. They closed on the date. Now, luckily, everything was okay. But it was so close to these sellers having to pay capital gains taxes. It could have been a massive nightmare. So you really need to be able to see those things happen and really push. And ever since then, I've suggested, I just had another seller in the same situation. Like, let's push it like 2 weeks over the 2 years just to be 100% sure that nothing crazy happens. And I talked to another listing agent who did have that happen, and they had to go to court. It was about a $40,000 tax liability that they had to get out of the escrow company for closing early after all these documents stating not to close. And just, it can be really bad. And this is a big deal. These aren't little numbers, little things that we're dealing with here. These are big problems and massive amounts of stress. So to mitigate that stress is a good thing. Now, moving on to some more tips to sell your house for the most money as possible. Like I said, that initial listing price is super important. Don't underestimate what a clean house will do to buyers. When they walk through, they want to see that it's clean. I don't care if you, like, I'm not living there. Why do the carpets need to be clean? Why does it matter? This, that. They just want to know that you take care of the house. If there's still toys from your kid on the ground that you just don't care about that you leave there, it just creates kind of a dirty environment. So the smell and cleanliness of a house is super important. If you're living there, make it seem like you don't live there. In my opinion, take down your pictures and some of that stuff. Not every time. Some people, if there's not a ton of decor in the house, maybe leave your pictures up so that there's a little bit of something there. But yeah, kind of take your pictures down and almost stage the house with your own furniture. Staging has proven effects to increase sales price and sales velocity in terms of speed. It's crazy because in the beginning, I didn't like it. I like walking through an empty house where I can kind of envision my own stuff there. But a lot of buyers don't have that kind of design bone to be able to picture different things and ideas in that space. They kind of want it to be there, and they want to plug their stuff in where that stuff was so that they can kind of see space wise and how they're going to live. So that is super important as well. To get the most money for your house, you just have to get creative. Take really, really good pictures. Have your description dialed in for the property. Don't put your generic, this is a 3-2, 1500 square feet, come and see it today. Don't put any of that stuff. Dive in, really see what the perks are of the house and go through and see if there's anything that could be upgraded quickly and easily and affordably that will kind of make it worth it. If your carpets are shot, get new carpets. A few thousand dollars, that will go a long way. If your countertops are Formica and they're all chipped up, just get new Formica countertops. Have your windows cleaned. Have your driveway pressure washed. Have your landscaping done and tight. Have your roof cleared. And just those little things that a buyer might not notice intuitively and say, oh, I'm going to pay another $3,000 for this property because the driveway is clean. But that's just something that when they walk up, they go, oh my gosh, you know, this is clean. This is nice. This house is taken care of, where they don't just look at the concrete and go, oh my gosh, it's polished. It's nice and clean. It's not mossy or dirty. Those are a few things that I suggest is just pressure wash that driveway, pressure wash the garage, clean the garage out, you know, spray the garage door. Paint goes a really long way. If you have the funds and the availability, repainting the house in an extreme neutral color. I'm talking white with black trim, gray skirting, like white and black, white and gray. Do not do any crazy blues, greens, reds, anything like that. Even some browns. It's just not, it's not of our time. It was very popular 10, 15, 20 years ago, but people want that light, bright, clean look. And as funny as it is, just make sure your locks work, your handles are all good. There's nothing jiggling off the handle or anything like that. Just make sure everything's tight. Do a walk around. And another suggestion that I do to get into the nitty gritty a little bit, if you're selling your house, get the inspections done up front. This will save you a ton of time and headache with requests for repairs and issues and buyers getting scared of things that they don't know initially. If I can buy a house and I have the kind of maintenance records on file, I can look at them and go, yeah, I know what I'm getting into. Okay, cool. And then I can go and buy that house. with no questions asked. There's no, and I don't know why more listing agents don't force their sellers to do this. There's nothing worse than getting into escrow with some buyers and then finding out that the HVAC system's all ripped up and rats are living under the house. And it's like, okay, cool, this blew up this deal. Now everyone, buyer, seller, listing agent, buyer's agent, has to deal with this crap and figure this thing out. And I've got to walk my buyers off the ledge from leaving, and their sellers are mad because they didn't know. And it just creates all these problems. So like when I do a flip, I get an inspection report and I will fix almost every single thing that I possibly can on that inspection report. And I will print it out and I will highlight and check off everything that's done. And then I will upload that report to the MLS so that when the buyers walk in, they can go, oh, there's a GFI that's not connected. There's some exposed wiring under the house. And there's a checkbox. That's taken care of. That's taken care of. That's taken care of. That's taken care of. So if I can do everything, and I know sometimes inspectors get a little sideways and they call out some weird little chintzy stuff that doesn't matter. But if I can show you a home inspection report that there is literally nothing not done on, then your buyers can be super comfortable. And this is a big decision, especially if it's a first time home buyer or even third, fourth, fifth time home buyer. They want to feel comfortable in their investment. They don't want to buy a $500,000 house and know that they've got to do some work or they've got some sketchy wires under the house or the HVAC is disconnected on one of the vents in the bathroom upstairs. They don't want to deal with that. So to know that this house is totally buttoned up, the past reports cleared, all of this stuff, doing that stuff on the front end will make a super smooth, super easy transaction and will guarantee you can get more for that house. When people walk through a house and they make an offer, they look at all the aspects of the house. Maybe they do have to repaint it a little bit. Maybe the countertop's a little chipped. Maybe the cabinets need to be replaced or this or that. And they will account for that in their offer, especially in this market. So if before they even walk in the house, they know they don't really have to put a dollar into repairing this house. The only money that they will need to spend is upgrading it. That's a really good feeling to a buyer walking in. I know when I buy a house, if I know the inspection report's cleared, the home inspection and pest inspection, there's nothing on it. That is awesome. I really have nothing to worry about when I walk into that house. Like I am way more likely to pull a trigger. And so that is a really good way to increase the purchase price and make a buyer a little bit more comfortable to spend a few extra bucks when buying your house, because they know that they don't need to cheap out on their purchase price to be able to account for some of the things that they don't know, some of those hidden factors and things like that. And it also mitigates there's two sides of it. If you're selling your house for 500 and someone offers 500, as a buyer's agent, I do it, so I know the game. You go, okay, we'll offer 500. And then when the inspection report comes back, we'll see what we can hammer them on. We'll try and get you some money back, some money off, some, you know, repair money, things like that. It's bad, but it's what real estate agents do. I have the best interest. My job when representing a buyer is to get them the best deal that I possibly can. And that's what I take pride in. That's why I have business and things like that, is because I really try and do that as much as I possibly can. Well, when you do this, when you do the inspection reports up front, you get rid of that negotiation on the back end. They can't go, oh, you didn't tell me that the HVAC is disconnected. I'm going to need $3,000 off. That scared me. You can't pull anything like that. It's all up front. And you just do a basic inspection, a walkthrough, and then you could dang near remove inspection contingencies because you know what's going on. So that is a way to not only sell your house for more, but also keep more through escrow and not have someone beating you up over little requests for repairs and eating up your time finding contractors to do little onesie twosie stuff on that property, because that's always stuff that you don't account for when you're selling a house and can chew into that budget a little bit. So other than that, other little things that you can do is find a title company with, you know, lower title fees, make a deal with them if you do a lot of business. And just look at every aspect of the deal. Like I said, if you can save on taxes by buying another house like that in the same year or doing a 1031, there's other ways to maybe not sell your house for more, but keep more money when you do sell your house. So definitely hire a real estate agent that can help you go over all of those options and make sure you make the best investment that you possibly can. And just make sure that house is clean, bright, light, and smells good, and you should be okay. Take great pictures. And in my opinion, post it on like a Thursday morning. I always love a Thursday morning because you get some of the hotheads that really love it. They'll show it Thursday. Some of the people that like it a lot will show it on Friday. And then you'll get more people shown through the weekend. You can do an open house on Saturday and get a bunch of people walking through and get some business there. I always like to invite a few friends to an open house too, just to have some people walking through and create that kind of buzz and like, okay, I'm not the only one after this thing. If other people want it, I probably want it too. That's just how we are as humans. So those are just a few things. I hope you sell that house for as much as you possibly can. Be smart on that initial number that you post, and best of luck to you. All right, on to the next question here. How do you handle evictions? I'm having a tenant take advantage of me and not pay her rent. I want to know the best way to proceed. Well, the best way to proceed is, one, get a property manager, two, get a lawyer. I'm not sure what state you are in, but in California, is the non-negotiable. You have to have a property management or a lawyer to do an eviction. There's a couple different options that you can have here. One would be something called cash for keys, which is something that I absolutely hate doing, which is where you say, hey, you know, I know you're not paying rent, but I'll give you $10,000 and you give me the keys and I'm going to change the locks and you're going to disappear and forget the whole thing happened. It works sometimes, and sometimes it can save you money, but I just hate it. It's like someone's taken advantage of you already and you just give in and just say, here, take all my money and then just get the heck out of here. Just a dirtbag way to do that stuff. So don't mess around with this stuff. There's a lot of legality involved and intertwined in this eviction stuff, and you can get bit really hard if you do the wrong thing. I had to deal with an eviction. I had a tenant live there for about 20 years, and the house was in bad, bad shape, like not even livable. And what we did was we found another property for them to move into. And this property was out of town. It had more space for all their stuff. I mean, they were the broken down car people, motorcycles laying down in the front yard, just the whole nine. And we found another place for them to rent. We told them, hey, we'll give you all of your deposit back. We'll even give you another $2,000 if you get out of here and go off to this other place. They moved. They had all their stuff packed up late. As soon as they knew that they had some other option, they completely stopped paying rent. We got into it multiple times. They wouldn't leave. They had so much stuff, trailers and trailers and trailers of stuff. And this was all handled through my property manager, thank God, because I don't know how I would have navigated the situation. It's just so touchy, and you can, you know, the tenants nowadays have so much power, especially in California. He said this. He didn't do this. If you don't do one little notice or one little thing, they can sue you. So everything has to be buttoned up perfectly and all the ducks are in a row before you bring the sheriffs out there to do a lockout or something like that. Anyway, this tenant, after not paying rent for like 6 months, finally moves out. And my property manager goes to do the final walkthrough, make sure everything's out. And she opens up the front door, and in the side bedroom, there's a random guy laying there. And he's in a recliner, just nothing in the house, just by himself in the recliner. And she goes, what are you doing? Why are you here? Like, everybody's supposed to move out. And this wasn't a tenant. This wasn't anyone that we knew. And he said, I don't have anywhere to go. They kicked me out. I have nowhere to go. And the problem with this is, so this random guy was living with our tenants. And when the tenants moved out, they didn't want to bring this guy with them. So they grabbed everything, hauled it off, and they said, you're on your own. We don't care what happens to this house. We're out. You can stay here or whatever. So he was solo. The problem is he was getting mail there. In California, if they get mail there, they can squat and do basically whatever the heck they want to do. So we called the sheriffs, and I'm a little bit more of a hothead. I'm like, we need to get him out of there, physically get him out of there if we have to. Like, it's our house. Like, we're so close to having this guy, this tenant's gone. And then there's this last roadblock. We brought the sheriffs out, and he ended up calling some sister he had or something like that to pick him up and get him out of there. But it was close. If he wanted to, he could have stayed there again, and we would have gone through the whole entire thing. And thank God my property manager is nasty and knows exactly what to do in these situations and has all the paperwork and all the ducks in a row, because it is very easy to get sued. There's a lot of very tenant-friendly laws and areas here in California, so you got to have your ducks in a row. So quick and dirty answer, get a property manager, get a lawyer, and make sure you do exactly what you need to do to get these people out. Cash for keys is a good, simple, clean break, but I it's not one of my favorite things. It's kind of something I like to supplement on an eviction to make 100% sure they do get out or don't put concrete in your toilets or pull your sink off the wall or take your cabinets with them. But it's really a tough and horrible situation, especially to put somebody out on the street like that. If they're being evicted, they are obviously in a bad situation, and it is the single worst part of being a real estate investor is dealing with this stuff. But we have a business to run. We have families that we have to feed, and it's just part of the business. It's horrible and just really disheartening and can beat you up for sure when you have to kick somebody out, especially if they don't have anywhere to go or, you know, situations like that. But you really have to do what's right for you in your financial situation, because when this whole COVID thing hit and people didn't have to pay their rent, there was no mortgage company saying, you don't have to pay your mortgage, you're good. Yeah, it's fine, California. Nah, don't worry about it. We'll catch your mortgage later. There was forbearance, but what a lot of people didn't know is forbearance also counts as a negative impact on your credit history. It counts as a default. So people were doing forbearance like it was free money or kicking the can down the road for their mortgage payment. And that actually is a penalty to you. So there was no help for landlords. There was a lot of help for tenants. So when you know that the state or government doesn't really have your back, you need to do everything you can yourself to cover yourself. And that means kicking somebody out. Then that's what it means. There's other resources that tenant can take advantage of. And it does suck, but it's all part of the game, unfortunately. So be smart, get a lawyer, and make sure you've got everything that you need to make that thing successful and go through. Even if it takes a few months, just make sure that your expenses are low and you pilfer away some money to be able to cover a loss if you need to, or some legal fees to be able to cover that. That's all the cost of doing business. All right, on to our last question here. How can I grow my portfolio more? I want to buy more properties, but I am low on cash. I own 4 single family rental properties and want to get more. Please help. Okay, you own 4 single family rental properties and you are out of cash. I really hope that you are out of cash to buy more, as in you don't have $100,000 to buy another house, but you do have some cash on the back burner. If you own 4 properties, you have to set money aside for things that can happen. I mean, we just talked about evictions. You're 10 grand into an eviction if push comes to shove, at least. So, I mean, that's not even lost rent, all that other stuff. So you really got to make sure that you have that savings. So the first thing I suggest to you is save up, one, not to buy more, but 2, just to maintain what you have right now. Sounds like you got a good start, solid. Aside from that, assuming you do have a little slush fund for things that can happen with those rentals and you just need some money to buy more, look at home equity line of credits. Just do a portfolio evaluation, as I call it. You should look at return on equity. If you have 4 properties, you probably have a good chunk of equity on one or more of them, unless you bought them all in the last year or something like that. You need to audit each property and see how it's performing. If I have a property right now, it's worth about $350,000. Renting it out, it makes about $400 a month, but I could sell it and cash out about $140,000. So I'm going back and forth on what makes the most sense here. is it worth sitting on and making $400 a month, or is it worth selling and netting $140,000? If the rents did not change and I kept renting it for $400 cash flow, and the house was never worth any more, it was always worth what it is now, and I could net out $140,000, that cash flow would take 29 years to pay me that $140,000. So I need to look at it like, what's my return on equity? I'm making $400 a month and I've got $140,000 sitting here. Would I spend $140,000 to make $400 per month? Probably not. That is a 3.4% return. I don't like that. So yes, it's a great house in a great area. It's cash flowing, it's surviving, it's feeding the family, whatever it needs to do. But I look at that money and go, man, 140 grand. I could go put 20% down on a $700,000 house. Or, you know, it's tough. So I hate to buy, sell, and constantly be moving things around. I like to play the long game and put them into service and let them sit for a while and grow and grow and grow. And it will continue to grow. It has grown a lot, but with COVID, everything's been a little bit more inflated than it normally would be. So I have to keep that in perspective. But it seems that this house makes more sense to sell, take that cash and deploy it into an asset that's going to produce more cash flow for me if that's what I want. If I just want to grow my net worth, then let's just keep it here. It's a great house. It's going to keep appreciating. In 5 years, it'll probably be a $200,000 net income property if I were to sell it. So I just keep going back and forth. I'm keeping it for now because if I don't know what to do, I don't do anything at all. I just sit and wait until it feels right. But it does kind of hurt knowing I'm technically getting a 3.4% return on my equity on that property. And I can take that and go do a bigger deal. So my suggestion to you is take a look at what you have. If you're out of cash, and that's also the difference. If I had a deal and I needed the cash to take the deal down and it was a once in a lifetime thing, I would wish I had that cash to be able to put down on a new property to purchase that and take advantage of that opportunity. So if I did not have any cash to be able to buy a property, then I would probably honestly sell this property, take that cash and go put it into something else or sit on it and wait for that opportunity. Fortunately, I do have some to be able to keep buying and not, I don't have to sell this house. So I'm not in this situation, but that's kind of my thought process when it comes to this. I want to be, especially when you're talking about selling it, it takes 3-4 months to be able to get through with a sale, the escrow, and then get that cash and then deploy it again. If an opportunity comes to me tomorrow, I'm screwed, right? If I don't have the cash, I miss that opportunity. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, that's a great buy. Listen, hold on 90 days for me. I'll be right back and I'm going to get some cash for you. I'll be right back. That's not how this thing works. When a deal comes, you got to take it down. So in your situation, if you don't have the cash, but you've got the property, look at what that return on equity is. And if you don't know how to do that, to see what equity you have, do not look at your loan amount and subtract it from what you think your house is worth. Absolutely do not do that. Look at what your house is worth to start and be conservative. Always be conservative. Don't be pie in the sky. And if you have to pay a real estate agent $100 to give you a CMA and get you an accurate sale price, then fine, then do that. If that means you kind of running your numbers accurately. So to find your return on equity, like I said, start with the equity. Find out what your house is worth. Take off 6% for real estate fees. Take off 3% for closing costs. Now you have that number. That is what you're going to quote unquote net when you sell. Those are going to be your fees. And I'd also take off a few $1,000 for some repairs or something like that if something came up. Now take that number after those subtractions for real estate fees and escrow fees, subtract that number from your loan amount. Whatever number you have now, you need to decide what amount of taxes are going to be taken out of that. If it's 34%, if it's 35%, figure that number out and go to a CPA if you need to. Do not guess. Depends on what state, area, and tax bracket you're in. Once you have that final number, that is your net number. Now, add up what cash flow that house is bringing you every month. Make sure you account for vacancies, maintenance expenses, things like that. Whatever cash flow that house brings in a year, divide that by the net amount that you will get after selling this house. And that is your return on equity. If you don't like that number very much, if that's not worth it to sell the house to you, you can also do a home equity line of credit. And when you do a home equity line of credit, the beautiful government does not tax you on debt, which is freaking awesome, right? So you can sell your house and take that cash and they'll tax you on it. But if you borrow against your house and take that cash, they don't tax you on it. Makes perfect sense. So that's just the government for you. So if you do home equity line of credit, if your house is worth $300,000, you've got to leave usually 20 to 25% in the property, and you can take out everything above that. So if your house is worth $300,000 and you have to leave 25% of your equity in the house and you can take out everything above that, 25% is $75,000, which means you can take out $225,000 depending on what your loan amount is. So if you've got $100,000 worth of equity, and so that example was if you paid cash for that $300,000 house, which most of us don't. So if you have $100,000 worth of equity in this $300,000 house, got to leave $75,000 in, which means you can take $25,000 out in a home equity line of credit. Now, the interest rate on a home equity line of credit is typically adjustable, and they're not extremely good rates. Right now, you're going to get 7 probably. So you have to understand that, yes, this is a great way to access money and cash pretty quick. A lot of times a bank will cover the appraisal to see what this house is worth to get those numbers for you anyway, which is really cool. It can be a free, easy way to have that money accessed. And on the property that I was talking about earlier, I actually do have a line of credit on it. I have a checkbook just sitting and waiting. I haven't taken a dollar out of it. I haven't done anything, but I opened up the account, got the appraisal, got all my numbers down, and I have a X amount of money available if I want it. I just need to write that check. So I want it there available just in case something happens and I need to take a stab at a deal or do anything that I need to do. So once you have that number, the hardest part with the HELOC is now if you're using that money as a down payment, now you're financing your down payment. So if you buy a house for $100,000 and your mortgage amount is $600 with a 20% down payment, your mortgage is not $600 because that 20% down payment you also financed at 7%. Right? So now you've got a mortgage on your $100,000 house for $600, and you have a payment on your home equity line of credit for $200. So that makes your total debt service $800. And if this house only cash flows or only rents for $800, boom, you're at $0. And the other hard part is that home equity line of credit is just revolving. It's not constantly paying itself down, where in 5, 10, 20 years, that thing goes away. It's interest only. So if you are paying $200 a month for this home equity line of credit, and that's just what your payment is, it is interest only. So there's nothing going towards principal or paying down that little $25,000 loan. It's up to you to be able to pay more every month to pay that down. And $200 interest only a month is crazy aggressive on a $25,000 loan. It's just a funny example. But I'm just saying that whatever that payment is, don't look at that and run your numbers. Add a certain amount to that home equity line of credit payment so that you can also pay that off. The nice part about that is you can choose to not pay any extra and then pay some extra later. Or you can say, you know what? I'm going to hold this house for a while. I'm going to refinance this house once I have some equity, and I'm going to use the $25,000 from a cash out refinance to pay off that HELOC which will bring that other property up to being true that I took the HELOC off of. And then you'll have your house, quote unquote, free and clear because you didn't have any actual cash into it. So HELOCs are a great, great, great way to be able to access cash, especially if you own a few properties, but they're kind of tough to negotiate with, and running numbers using a HELOC is kind of tricky. So reach out if you do have any more questions on kind of that HELOC running numbers thing, because I would hate for you to run your numbers in one way and have an expectation and then not have that happen and just kind of be over leveraged and in a tough spot, because now you're putting both properties on the line, right? You're risking one by taking a HELOC out and risking that money on another property to purchase it and put that property into service. So you got two properties in limbo now just to kind of build a new one up, and you just got to make sure it's worth it and it makes sense for you. I don't want you to, you know, take a hit on two properties just because you're trying to overextend and buy another one. Although I do think that right now is the time to kind of get out and about, get creative to access cash and make something like that happen. I think there's some good opportunity in the market right now. Other than that, if you don't have a ton of equity in those, partner up with somebody. There are always people that have money that are looking for deals. Reach out to me. I'm happy to help you out or connect with somebody, but I am always looking for deals. It's the single hardest thing to do in real estate is find deals. So if you've got the access to the deals, you've got opportunities and things like that, reach out to your sphere of influence. It can be weird asking other people for money or asking people to invest with you, but this is the way that you need to think about it. If I had $100,000 cash, somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, Jake, I need you to put $50,000 into this deal. These are the numbers. And it looks like in a year, you can double that money. It'll cash you out another $50,000. And, you know, you'll double your $50,000 investment in a year." Like, I'd be stoked, especially if I looked at it myself and decided that that was the case. Yeah, awesome. I would be mad if you did not approach me with that opportunity. Like, you're talking about making people money. Like, everyone wants to make more money, right? So if you're afraid or timid to ask somebody for money or ask somebody to invest in an opportunity with you, you're just being crazy. Because if somebody has money, somebody has the capability of taking advantage of an opportunity like that, they would obviously know the basics of investing and have those kind of investment wits about them. And they would love the opportunity to take advantage of like something like that. So my perspective is I would be mad if someone was afraid to approach me to double my money in a year. Like, no, dude, freaking tell me. Like, are you kidding me? Like, you were too afraid to reach out and ask for money or whatever it is. Like, dude, get out there and freaking like start asking people, hitting people up, going, "Hey, I can get you a 20% return. Cool. Sick. If I vet you and look at that deal and go, yeah, does look like a 20% return. Cool. Then I'm going to be pumped that you asked me and I'm going to praise you, right? And I'm going to be calling you once we finish it going, where's the next one, dude? Find it, find it, find it, find it, right? I'm going to be begging you for another deal. The only thing I will say is be conservative and realistic. Do not be pie in the sky to get people excited to invest with you. That's a little caveat. Just be super realistic and say, listen, this is what worst case scenario looks like. This is what will probably happen. And this is best case. I don't even really like to go best case because people always go, best case, cool. That's awesome, man. I'm going to quadruple my money in a year. Thanks, appreciate it. And they move along. So be smart in running those numbers, and you are handling other people's money. So be very careful. Make sure you know what you're doing, but do not be afraid to reach out. If it's a bad opportunity, they'll tell you, hey, yeah, it doesn't look right for me. Thanks though, man. And you move along. But just really think of it in the opposite way, which is, man, you're giving people the opportunity to make more money. That is not embarrassing or grimy or slimy or scary. It's like, you want to make more money or not? Nope. Okay, cool. On to the next guy that does. So with that being said, thank you all for submitting the questions. Like I said, keep emailing me and DMing me on Instagram. I've got a giveaway I'm doing. I've got some cool podcast hats and my book that I'll be giving out and sending to you if you submit questions and I choose you. So keep it up. And until next time, keep investing.